Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
On a mixtape just around the corner, did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like song, and then my song's gon' break through.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. Today is Thursday, April 4th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly, sitting here on a very dark and gloomy April evening here in Vancouver, Canada, but that's okay. Weekend is literally right around the corner. Just before I sat down to start recording the podcast, we had FP1 at the Japanese Grand Prix at Suzuka, which is one of my favorite tracks, one of my favorite races, and one of my most favorite places in the entire world. So really looking forward to the Japanese Grand Prix this week. Hammy's got some family commitments this week, so he won't be around until this time next week, but that's okay. We're going to push ahead. Lots of things to talk about. We've got some silly season updates, and we're going to preview the race, talk about a lot of stuff, and we'll get into that in just one moment. But before we do that, just want to give a quick shout out to the Race Weekend magazine, and you can find them at theraceweekend.com, and that is RACEWKND.com. Save 10% on a subscription by entering in our promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout, and also check out racingexclusives.com, and you can find them, obviously, at racingexclusives.com for unique Formula One memorabilia, and they've got a lot of great stuff there. Comes with a certificate of authenticity, so check them out. Once again, racingexclusives.com. Okay, let's just jump right into it. Since it is a race weekend, pardon me, let's just have a quick refresher as to what is going on in the different championships at the moment. So let us start with the Drivers' Championship. After three races, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and Australia, Max Verstappen leading the World Championship with 51 points. Charles Leclerc from Ferrari is just 4 points behind with 47. Sergio Perez is third in the Drivers' Championship with 46. Carlos Sainz is fourth with 40. And then Oscar Piastri and Lando Norris, not quite in a dead tie for, you know, deadlocked in P5 in the Drivers' Championship, but only a point separating the two of them. Two McLaren drivers have 28 and 27 points respectively. All right, in the Constructors' Championship, Red Bull leading the way with 97, Ferrari second with 93, McLaren Mercedes have 55 points, Mercedes themselves have 26, and Aston Martin currently have 25. Okay, let's take a quick look at the fantasy standings, which of course are not loading up properly, so I will try and burn a little bit of time while that loads and see if it does, because it was here a couple of minutes ago. Of course, when I need it for something important, it actually isn't there, but hey, it's actually loading, so that is not too bad. It was just going to go down really quickly the top five. So we after three races, we have Kerry Duro F1 in first, the Red Beards in second, and DJ Bean third. Hamilton, eight-time champions, have dropped down to fourth, and Tails I Win is up into fifth after three races. So lots to play for, obviously, in our fantasy league, and that will run, obviously, all season long. Okay, let's jump right into the news. So Max Verstappen has said this week that he is very happy with Red Bull, but he still hasn't committed to anything after 2028 when his current contract expires. He's obviously been pretty, you know, I wouldn't say, well, obviously he wasn't at the center of the controversy surrounding Christian Horner, but there have been a lot of rumors about Max leaving Red Bull and and maybe going over to Mercedes. But anyways, he was asked at the Japanese Grand Prix yesterday just about what his status, what his plans are in the future. So he said, quote, "I have a contract with Red Bull until 28. After that, I first want to see if I even want to continue. That's for me the most important. It's not so much about where. These things I really don't think about at the moment," end quote. So there you go. Typical Max, not really a lot to say, but he said that before because we all know that we got a couple more years. We got this year and next year in the current formula. And then beyond that, in 2026, we've got a whole new Formula One will reinvent itself, new set of technical regulations, new power units, and all those sorts of things. And I was thinking about it last week that this current formula that we're in just really hasn't lived up to the expectations. You know, when they were delayed because of COVID for a year and were introduced in 22 rather than 2021, there was a lot of hope that these new cars would really bring a lot more competitive racing back to Formula One, a lot more, you know, a lot more scrapping on the track, and we would see cars fighting with each other for position and a lot of overtaking. And we have a couple of times here and there. I mean, we saw a lot of issues with the porpoising and what they call now properly vertical displacement, but that by and large has been solved. But we don't always see a lot of, wheel to wheel racing. We do in certain times, but it's been a little bit frustrating. And there's no guarantee that the new formula that will come out, the new set of regs that will come out in a couple of years will actually be an improvement. We all hope that this current set would, but they have been a disappointment. I think it's pretty fair to say that now. We're a couple of years into this and it really hasn't delivered, because I remember if you go back several years ago now when they revealed some of the concept drawings of what the cars might look like once these regulations came into effect, and there was a lot of, there was a lot of talk and a lot of positivity and a lot of hope that they would develop into something, and sadly it actually hasn't, right? I mean, it's been quite disappointing in that respect. And directly related to that as well is the fact that we have a cost cap now in place, and perhaps if there was unlimited spending that we saw in previous years of Formula One, that if these regs hadn't worked out, we could have seen the different teams try and spin their way to a quicker fix. And now, of course, that doesn't always work. And, because of the budget restraints and all the corresponding things like wind tunnel time and CFD modeling and all these different things. So there really are a lot of different things in play here. But, the long story short, especially when it comes to Max Verstappen, is that, and I talked about with Sam Cooper on the podcast last weekend, that Max likes to race just whatever it is, and he's already proven everything that he needs to do in Formula One. And if he's not having fun here, then maybe he will walk away and do something else. I mean, he's certainly not sticking around for the money, because he's earned more money, I'm sure, at this point in his career than he'll ever be able to spend in his lifetime. Although, given the opportunity, if I have that money, I'd do my very best to try to do that. But you know what I mean, right? I mean, he could very well decide to go and do something else, go off to a different series. But it really is interesting that this is basically the first time he's come out that I've noticed in the last couple of weeks, especially in the shadow of the whole Christian Horner scandal at Red Bull, allegedly. We know that it was a scandal or what was going on there. Anyways, there was a lot of turmoil in the team and suggestions that that he might move on. But this is the first time in a while that Max has actually spoken up and said that, he's fine where he is, because I can't help but wonder if some of those rumors were just things that were leaked to the media that maybe try and leverage something or maybe try and force some situation in Red Bull. But who knows? It's certainly something to keep an eye on. But at least if Max ain't it, I tend to believe him. So we'll wait and see if he decides to stick around, because we will talk about Mercedes in a couple of minutes, because that is a very tantalizing seat, because you have to think at some point that team is going to turn it around. Anyways, Carlos Sainz, the Ferrari driver who is out of a seat for next year at the moment, said it's now time to speed up talks to find a race seat for next year. Carlos had to say, quote, "I'm talking obviously to a few because that's what my management team and myself should do when I don't have a job for next year yet. So we're talking to pretty much all of them. It's just a matter of obviously going into more detail and seeing the more realistic options and what are the best options for me and my future, which I don't have any news for you or nothing to say here today. The only thing I would say is that obviously it's now time to speed up a bit everything, and hopefully we'll get it sorted out sooner rather than later," end quote. So that, you know, that's interesting too, because typically like the silly season stuff is the, you know, it tends to speed up a little bit more when we get into the summer, but there are a couple of interesting options there. I mean, obviously the Sergio Perez thing at Red Bull hasn't sorted itself out, even though he's had some decent results, you know, as of late. He's delivering points that the team needs, still issues in qualifying. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily rule him out at Red Bull. That would be a pretty lethal 1-2, because Carlos, I think, is a much more predictable and consistent driver than Sergio Perez is. However, it really is interesting because over the past number of years, we've seen Max excel in the Red Bull, and a lot of the other drivers that have partnered up with him have struggled quite often and haven't been able to replicate, obviously, the same level that Max Verstappen has, but they've also struggled just generally with the car, whereas I think it's kind of interesting because I think they've often said that the car specifically isn't designed for Max, but I think it's designed to a lot of his attributes and his driving style and things like that. But, you know, a lot of drivers that he's been partnered up with haven't been able to deliver to the same level that he has. So that could be potentially a landing spot for Carlos Sainz. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, or probably a month or two now, before Lando Norris announced his new contract extension with McLaren, Christian Horner was talking about him and how he would, you know, he would be a good fit at Red Bull. As far as I know, I haven't heard Christian Horner say anything similar about Carlos Sainz, but if he comes knocking and wants to sit down and have a discussion, and what does, you know, Carlos doesn't have to, he doesn't have to hide it because he knows that he's out of a seat and it's nothing to do with him. I mean, because Lewis is coming in to take that second Ferrari seat next year. So he doesn't have to hide anything. I mean, it's in his own benefit right now to go out and have these conversations and see what happens and see what he can find, or, you know, what he can find for himself next year. And also Mercedes would be the other big one, and well, even Red Bull, because there is that story that we were talking about on the podcast a couple of days ago, that Eddie Jordan, former Formula One team principal of the same, their team of the same name, which obviously he founded, was saying that it's not beyond the realm of possibility that if it doesn't work out with some of these other ones, that he might end up actually partnering with Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin. That would mean that Lance Stroll would be out of a drive, which is something that you know, we've talked about quite a bit over the years and speculated on, that, you know, when does you know, when do they cross the line at Aston Martin with Lance Stroll, and when does the chairman, his dad Lawrence Stroll, finally decide that that enough is enough and he has to, you know, look to a different driver if he wants to win races and championships and things like that, because Lance never has been able to really put it together. He's had some good results here and there, but has never really taken his, you know, hasn't really taken things to the next level, despite being partnered up with some pretty capable drivers and world champions, the likes of Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel. So there's that as well. Okay, so let's talk now about Valtteri Bottas, because he says he's slowly getting the ball rolling on his F1 future. And so he's at Sauber, where he's been for the past couple of years after moving on from the Mercedes. So he hasn't said or really said too much. He said that there's been some what he calls tentative talks with Audi for 2026, and they're starting to get together a little bit more. Bottas had to say, quote, "I'm slowly getting the ball rolling, but nothing fundamental yet. I think we need a few more races a season under our belt, and hopefully with a few good results, the ball will roll a bit more, but not much yet." That's why you need to try and be one step ahead. That's what my management is working on in the background. I'm focused on the driving. I've got people in the background trying to read the market and work on the different options if that is what is needed. I don't really want to put any specific numbers on how many years I have left because I don't see the end coming yet. I still feel like I have a lot to give and lots to achieve. Now my motivation is to get back closer to the top. I miss that feeling of fighting more towards the front end. Obviously, being part of Audi, that could be a great opportunity for me to do that. So, of course, that's interesting for me. End quote. So, I think it is very, very interesting for Valtteri Bottas, who's now in his 12th season as a Formula One driver, that where he could potentially go. And I guess it really is up to Bottas himself to see where he feels like the best deal for him, or not in terms of money, but well, that would obviously be part of it. But what might be the best option for him? I mean, he's 34 at the moment, still doing quite well, considering he isn't driving a Mercedes and won 10 races there during the several years that he was partnered up with Lewis Hamilton. And he, I think, is an interesting character to have around. And actually, character is quite an appropriate term, because since he's gotten away from Mercedes, that bit of the cheeky personality that I don't think any of us really appreciated was part of Valtteri Bottas' personality has really come out. I think that commercial that he did for Uber ahead of the Australian Grand Prix was really, really quite funny. But yeah, I mean, kind of going back to where he thinks his best place might be, that's really up to him to decide. I mean, the thing is with Audi, it's not a foregone conclusion that once they get into Formula One for that inaugural season in 2026 that they'll be a success. I mean, it's a very, very difficult thing to do to spool up a competitive Formula One team. I mean, they've been working on this project for a while, but still, I mean, it's all building engines and test beds and computer models and things like that. So I mean, they don't have a car out there yet, so it's going to be a work in progress. And we've seen how difficult it is to win from Formula One. That is just a fact of life. And I'd like to see Audi obviously come in and be competitive, and we'll see who they decide to bring on, because this Sauber thing is just a temporary situation until it becomes Audi proper in a couple of years. Okay, moving along to Mercedes. Total Wolf team principal over there says that Lewis Hamilton is not looking over the fence at Ferrari and their success so far this season. I mean, it's been a little bit hit and miss with Lewis over the first couple of races of the season. I mean, if we go and look at Lewis's results so far this year, he is currently 10th in the World Championship. Best finish on the season so far was a P7 in the first race of the year in Bahrain, 9th in Saudi Arabia, and then retired a couple of weeks ago in Australia. So not a great start for his season. I mean, like I say, he's 10th in the Drivers' Championship with 8 points. I mean, there's a lot of races to go. I mean, there is so many more races that we're going to run before we get to Abu Dhabi at the beginning of December. So, I mean, certainly his season can turn around, but it hasn't been a great start for him this season. So Toto had to say, quote, where did it go? I think the drivers are super in this whole setup, because Lewis is as good as you can be. He's in a situation, obviously, where on one side, it's super frustrating to see what we are not getting it. On the other side, look over the fence. It's pretty good to see what's happening there, but that is not his main priority today. George is just a fighter, and he's sticking in, and he knows that that's his place, so we've got to sort this out. You need to look at us like I need to look at myself. What is it? Why is it we can't just get there? We're humans. The data doesn't take decisions, humans do. So we're not stopping. I'm not sitting here and dwelling, but on the contrary, I'm thinking of what else it is that we need to do and how we can push. End quote. So I mean, what can Lewis really do? I mean, he's with Mercedes this year for another season. There's no point looking, somewhat enviously at the team you're going to be joining next year in Ferrari, which of course, they've had a decent start to the year. I mean, they won the race two weeks ago. Well, they had a 1-2 in Australia. Charles Leclerc, who finished P2, also got the fastest lap. Charles has had a P4, a P3, and a P2. He's had two of the fastest laps to start the year. Carlos Sainz had a P3 in Bahrain. He withdrew in Saudi Arabia, didn't race that one because of the appendix issue. So, I mean, those are some pretty solid results after three races, right? You know, compare that to like I said, to Lewis, a seventh, a ninth retirement, and then George Russell, a fifth, a sixth, and a 17th. So, well, George obviously had that crash at the end of the race after he had that incident with Fernando Alonso. But still, I mean, you know, sort of top five and six for the first two races of the season, you know, isn't great, but it certainly is early days in the season so far. You know, fortunes can turn around. I mean, Mercedes obviously isn't a team that's going to win the championship this season. Who knows if they've even got it, you know, got it in them to win a race this year. Maybe they will if this, you know, things go their way, but they've really dropped off that peak where they were up until a couple of years ago after dominating the sport for almost a decade. But Lewis is professional enough. I mean, he's a champ for a reason, and you know, his commitment, I think, is pretty solid. I don't see anything in Lewis Hamilton that makes me question his commitment to the team and what's going on, and will do what he can to help the team, because you know, even though he's leaving, he just, to me, he seems like a very good team player, and that will be part of you know, what he does at the at Mercedes before moving on. But certainly I think it must be frustrating for him to a certain extent, knowing that the team that he's going to is doing much better than team he's currently at, and he must be thinking at least, well, hopefully it's like that when I get here or get there for this time next year. Anyway, he's going to take a time out here quickly. We're going to have a brief message from our sponsor. We'll be back on the flip side, so please don't go away. Be back in just a moment.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, welcome back to the show. So Lewis Hamilton reckons that it would be great if Sebastian Vettel, who retired the year before last, would come out of retirement, and he feels it would be an amazing option if he were to rejoin Formula One with Mercedes, which he says it's an idea that he really loves. He says, quote, "I would love for Seb to come back. I think it would be an amazing option for the team, a German driver, a multi-world championship winning driver, someone who's got amazing values, will continue to take this team forward. I'd love it if he came back. I've never thought about taking a year or two off and then coming back, just like Seb. When I'm gone, I'm hopefully gone for good. You're always going to miss it. It's the greatest sport in the world, and it's the greatest experience in the world. It's the most amazing feeling to be working with a group of people towards winning something, achieving something. There's probably nothing that's ever going to feel the same. I've not asked any of the drivers what they're missing. I can just imagine," end quote. George Russell was also asked about the possibility of Sebastian Vettel making a comeback and coming out of retirement. And he said that he's basically ready to take on whoever they put in the car beside him at Mercedes. George had to say, quote, "Sebastian's a great person. He's a four-time world champion. And for sure, his personality is missed on the grid. I think it's important that we have the best 20 drivers in the world all competing for race wins and championships. I'm really happy and open to have anybody as my teammate, whether it's it's a world champion, whether it's a rookie, it doesn't change how I go about my business. We'll welcome anybody. You know, that actually would be a very interesting combination, or just in general. I mean, I think the combination of George Russell and Sebastian Vettel would be very interesting in and of itself. But I don't know. I really got the feeling that Sebastian just was ready to walk away from Formula One again. He'd won all his championships. He had an opportunity. He came sort of close-ish to winning one, or challenging one. I shouldn't say win one, but he did come very close and pushed Lewis Hamilton quite regularly when he was at Ferrari several years ago, and then, you know, kind of tailed off towards the end of his stint at Ferrari. It was pretty obvious that when Charles Leclerc joined the team, that he was the faster of the two drivers. And when Seb was partnered up with Kimi Raikkonen, it was good for him because he was the faster of the two drivers. He was winning races here and there. And like I say, at one point was challenging Lewis Hamilton for a world championship. When was that? 2017, 2018, thereabouts, kind of pushing my memory a little bit there. And then his time at Aston Martin, a little bit kind of a footnote to his career. Whether or not he wants to come out of retirement and do that, that's another question. I haven't heard or seen anything that suggests that he would. But, you know, if you kind of go back to that time, I mean, well, obviously he was a fantastic driver when he was at Red Bull. I mean, he won four championships in a row and he was unstoppable, and I mean, it was great. I mean, that's, you know, four-time world champion. I mean, what else do you add to that? I mean, he had an amazing career in Formula One and stepped into Ferrari after he stepped into the breach there, at least after Fernando Alonso decided to walk away and join McLaren. So, you know, he's had a successful Formula One career, but I felt that when he retired that he was pretty much done. I mean, he does have, I guess you could say, the benefit of having a year or so out of the sport, and that is a very, very long time. I mean, assuming that's something that he would even want to take on and come back and take that project on and actually get back into a Formula One car, especially at a team like Mercedes. I mean, what would his motivation be to do so? I mean, I agree with Lewis Hamilton. I think it would be absolutely great to see Sebastian Vettel back in Formula One, but sadly, I feel like those days are behind us. It's kind of interesting, you know, that when, you know, sort of talking about possible replacements for himself at Mercedes, I'd be interested to see how that conversation with the reporter actually developed, or how that question was posed, because it'd be kind of funny that he would pick a former rival. And, you know, to be quite honest, I love the rivalry that he had with Sebastian Vettel. I mean, it was intense as all rivalries and title championship fights go, but you know, it didn't get as nasty as we've seen with Max Verstappen. I mean, that was pretty intense in 2021. I mean, those two had, you know, several, you know, a couple of comings together. Obviously, Silverstone was one. Then Monza, when they went into Redafilio at the first corner there, and Verstappen and Hamilton came together, and Verstappen went up over the top of his car, and Lewis was very, very fortunate that you know, he wasn't badly injured. So I mean, those two have a history, but I mean, there were some really good scraps between Lewis and Sebastian Vettel, but they obviously have a bit of an affinity towards each other, and Lewis obviously likes and respects him, and I don't know, I'd like to see him back, but like I say, I feel like that might be a little bit of a wishful thinking. Anyways, Andrea Kimi Antonelli, the Mercedes young driver, is ready to get his first Formula One test at the Red Bull Ring later this month. It's going to be a two-day test starting on the 16th of April, and he's going to get behind the wheel of a Mercedes W12, which was their 2021 Challenger. So this is going to be the first test in an F1 car for the 17-year-old, a protege, and it's going to be the first of several tests that he's going to have with Mercedes as they try to get him ready to prep him for Formula One, which is obviously in his future. And this is going to be in addition to the his commitments to Formula 2 with Prema. So he's I guess, in the mix to get the Lewis Hamilton's seat. So yeah, we heard that quote from George Russell just now. You know, he said he'd be willing to welcome anyone to the team, be it a world champion, which would be Sebastian Vettel, who that article about, or a rookie, which could be Andrea Kimi Antonelli. But that is a big ask. I mean, a 17-year-old, regardless of how good they are, and maybe he is one of these you know, generational talents, but you know, how often or how close are these generations again? Together. I mean, obviously, Max was one of those, you know, very rare talents that you see coming to Formula One at a very young age, at 16 or 17 or whatever it was, almost a decade ago now. And he spent his time and did his, you know, his apprenticeship at Toro Rosso before getting that promotion to Red Bull. And of course, it took a little bit of a, you know, he won that first race there. And that there was a bit of a fortunate circumstances around that, because that was the race that Lewis Hamilton and Kimi Rosberg crashed on the first lap of the Spanish Grand Prix. But, you know, it took a couple of years before Red Bull was able to give him the package that made him a legitimate title contender. The first big thing was getting the Honda engines. And then once they had the Honda engines in the car, the Hondas had to get them more power. But anyways, generational talents, and whenever we hear some of these hot young and up and coming you know, prospects or proteges or what do you want to call them, I kind of take a look at that with a little bit of a pinch of salt. You know, like be a little bit, you know, I wouldn't say wary, but it's one thing to be successful in the lower formulas at that age and then be able to transfer that into success at the Formula One level. Although Oliver Bearman, who is Antonelli teammate at Prema, did do exceptionally well when he scored seventh place at the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix earlier last month when he was filling in for Carlos Sainz. The thing I find interesting is now that these younger drivers seem to be better prepared and ready for Formula One sooner. And it's kind of funny now, because I look at the sort of the generation of the George Russells and the Lando Norrises and who else would be in that class, the Charles Leclercs. I still think of these kind of like these drivers in their late teens or early 20s, and all of a sudden they're kind of like in their mid to later 20s, which seems to, and Max Verstappen, you could throw him into that conversation as well. I mean, obviously not old by any standard, but it really is interesting that within the last 10 years or so, especially, that these younger drivers are ready for Formula One a lot sooner than they have been in the past. Toto Wolff said that he is going to take some time, that you know, when it comes to deciding who's going to take Lewis Hamilton's seat for next year when he moves on to Ferrari. He told Fox Sports Australia at the Australian Grand Prix, quote, "There are still a few options that are really interesting for us, from the very young super talent to someone of the other ones who are very experienced. That's not going to happen the next few weeks or months. I want to continue to monitor the market. It depends on what Max does," end quote. So I don't know if this has changed now. You know, we were talking earlier in the show about Max Verstappen basically saying he's very happy at Red Bull. He's happy to stay there until 2028. Does that mean he's committed to Red Bull? I mean, he's at least saying so publicly. So yes, maybe, but with an asterisk or whatever you want to put beside that that comment from Max. But certainly, you know, the comments from Toto are a couple of weeks old, and until, I guess, he would have confirmation one way or another. And let's not forget that the Verstappens and Toto Wolff do have lines of communication open, and I wouldn't be surprised if they've been talking back and forth. So once Toto knows for sure whether or not signing Max would be a realistic possibility, or if it's not going to happen, then he can look a little bit harder at some of the other drivers out on the market. I mean, Fernando Alonso has been linked to that seat at Mercedes. Carlos Sainz has been linked to that seat. Andrea Kimi Antonelli's been linked to that seat. So a number of different drivers have, and that won't sort itself out anytime soon, because once once Max is ruled out, you know, Toto's going to have some homework to do to decide whether or not, the remaining drivers are the ones that, who's going to be the one that he wants to be in that car. Anyways, just want to talk really quickly about Danny Ricciardo, because he's another one of these drivers that is always talked about these days. I mean, he's out of Formula One for half a season, comes back in, not quite this time last year after Nyck de Vries was let go by AlphaTauri or RB or whatever we're calling them now. Ricciardo comes in, he does pretty good after missing half a season and all those meaningful laps and races and time in the car that he obviously would have missed when he was on the sidelines and as a reserve driver at Red Bull after he was let go by McLaren at the end of the previous season. So anyways, he struggled a little bit for the first three races of the season, but he's been pretty adamant that the struggles and some of the challenges that he's had to start up this year are completely different than the problems that he had the previous couple of years when he was with McLaren. He was interviewed by Adam Cooper of motorsport.com, kind of a couple of interesting quotes in there. He told Adam, quote, "We're chasing a little bit, as always, downforce, a bit of rear grip. To be honest, I struggled a little bit in the high speed in Melbourne and Saudi. Saudi, we did see we were a bit down a bit, so we kind of felt like we had a bit of an explanation for that, but it was still the case in Melbourne through kind of turn 9 and 10 when I was down a bit compared to Yuki. I think we probably focus a little bit of our setup on those areas to give me that much confidence, and then I think the low and medium speed stuff were pretty much there. It's not a McLaren situation, so I think it's just important now that I just keep working with my engineers and we don't start talking or making too many suggestions or taking advice from the outside. Of course, I would have wanted more results from the first few races. I'm not happy with it, but it's important that we just stay on course ultimately and don't get sidetracked." And then Ricciardo goes on to talk a little bit more when he was, his experiences over the last year or so, and if he felt any pressure after having to come in replace Nyck de Vries last year. He said, quote, "I would say yes, but my answer is from me more than anyone. I'm sure there is from the outside, but I came into the season having a full preseason. I had a really good winter. I trained my butt off and I feel really good. So everything in my head and through my years of experience tells me that we should start the season firing on cylinders. So yeah, that's where I'm okay. It hasn't really happened yet and it's been three races, but I know I don't need to change anything. It'll come. It's just a little bit here and there. Whatever is maybe just missing at the moment will click. And I think it's just one weekend away from that," end quote. So there you go. Danny Ricciardo still not extremely worried about things to come and feels that there will be some good things to come from him in the season ahead. All right, well, let's talk about the Japanese Grand Prix now. Really excited about this one. Like I said earlier in the show, I really love Suzuka. I think it's a great track, and there's so many elements to it that I really love. I mean, you come out of the start finish straight, you go into turns 1 and 2, and then you go into the Suzuka S's, which are a series of corners that flick from the left to the right and back to the left and right again, and they sort of get tighter and more challenging to drive through. You've got the spoon corner, you've got R130, you've got the fact that the track winds back over on top of itself. It's just it's a really cool track to watch a Formula One race at, and it's one of my favorites. Fuji is another one that they've raced at as well, but I mean, when you compare the two tracks, I think that Suzuka is the far better of the two of them. If you go back, I mean, so they've used Suzuka for quite a number of years. Since 1987, the Japanese Grand Prix has been held there. Obviously, there were a couple of different years in between when we didn't have a race in 2020 and 21 because of COVID. But I mean, we had a very, very long stretch. I mean, there was no Japanese Grand Prix from 1978 to 1986. And then from 87, I mean, we've been there ever since. And, before that, I mean, there was, in the early 60s, they had a couple of non-championship races there at Suzuka. And they also had some at Fuji here and there. And there were some years where it wasn't held as well. But I mean, since the late mid-1980s thereabouts. I mean, it's been a real regular thing there. Although back in 2007 and 2008, we did have a brief interlude. We had a couple of races at Fuji. Lewis won at Fuji in 2007 when he was still driving for McLaren, and then Fernando Alonso won there in 2008 when he was driving for Renault. But apart from that, I mean, it's been pretty solid at Suzuka ever since. Love that track, like I say. I mean, let's take a look at some of the stats here about the track itself. Just wind it right back up to the top. So they've had the Japanese Grand Prix 48 times. Like I said, the first time was 1963. Michael Schumacher has won there the most with 6 wins. The most winningest constructor is McLaren, who've won a race there 9 times. So the circuit itself is 5.81 kilometers or 3.61 miles. Total race length is 307.47 kilometers or 191.05 miles. 53 laps. Last year on pole position, we had Max Verstappen. His pole time was a 128.877. The podium was Max Verstappen, who won all but one races last year. Well, Red Bull won all but one races. So this was one of the races that either Max or occasionally his teammate Sergio Perez did not win. Lando Norris came home second, and Piastri for McLaren. They were P2 and P3. Fastest lap was Max in the race. His fastest lap time was 134.183. Just taking a quick look now at the tires that are going to be brought by Pirelli for this weekend. So they're the C1s, C2s, C3s. So the C1 hards being the hardest tire compounds in the Pirelli range, and the C3 soft is kind of a mid-range one. Should take a look here at the stats. So the lap record was set by Lewis Hamilton in 2019. It is 130.983. So there you go. I mean, we're 4 seconds off of that last year, so it's unlikely that record will be broken this year. Let's just take a quick look at the race last year. Whereabouts did it go? Just pull this up here in a moment. Okay, there we go. So let's go back to qualifying. So in row one, we had Max Verstappen and Oscar Piastri. Row two was Lando Norris and Charles Leclerc. Row three was Sergio Perez and Carlos Sainz. Row four was an all-Mercedes lineup of Lewis Hamilton and George Russell. And then on row five was Yuki Tsunoda and Fernando Alonso. When we came down to the final race classification, as I said, it was Max Verstappen winning. Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri, the two McLaren drivers, took second and third. And let's not forget that this race was actually held, actually not all that long ago. It was the 24th of September 2023. It's usually at the back end of the calendar, so it hasn't been a huge passage of time since we had that race. And let's not forget that if it was actually a calendar year since the last Japanese Grand Prix, we wouldn't have seen Lando Norris and Oscar Piastri up so high, because if we dial it back 1 year ago to the last Formula One World Championship in 2023, the first third of the season up until almost first half of the season until we got to Austria at the beginning of July, things were just not going good for McLaren. It wasn't until that point that they got some of the upgrades on the car, first for Lando, then Oscar Piastri, that they were struggling a little bit, more than a little bit, and it wasn't until that point that they, their season really took off. So by the time we got to Japan, they were really, really flying at that point. In P4, we had Charles Leclerc. P5 was Lewis Hamilton. Then 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th was Sainz, Russell, Alonso, Esteban Ocon, and Pierre Gasly. So just going back now just to some of the stats in general, as I said, Michael Schumacher was the most winningest driver, who won there 6 times. Lewis has won there 7 times, pardon me, 5 times. He won there 2014, 15, 17, and 18, so he's overdue for a win there. Unlikely that he will win this weekend unless something bizarre happens, and there is a chance of rain on Sunday afternoon. I was looking at the weather forecast for Suzuka. So Saturday, we're looking at sunny skies, 22 degrees Celsius, or about 72 degrees Fahrenheit. Sunday at at race time at about 2 p.m. So qualifying will go 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon local time at the track at Suzuka. The race itself will go an hour earlier on Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. And as I mentioned, that we're looking at about 40% chance of rain, 18 degrees Celsius or 65 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, a wet race or some showers could certainly make make it quite interesting. Max Verstappen, as we know, is an exceptionally good driver in the wet. And, stranger things have happened. You know, rain does make it a lot more unpredictable when it comes to races in the wet. And it certainly would not be unwelcome if we had a wet race, make it a little bit more unpredictable anyway. So we'll see what happens. As I mentioned, on the constructor side, McLaren have won 8 times. Ferrari have won there 7 times. Ferrari have not won there in 20 years, though. The last time a Ferrari driver won at the Japanese Grand Prix was back in 2004, and that was one of Michael Schumacher's 6 wins there. Mercedes and Red Bull have both won there 6 times each, and then Benetton and Williams 3 times apiece. So there you go. Let's talk now. Let's take a quick look now because, as I mentioned before, I came into the studio here this evening. We had just missed FP1. So Max Verstappen's fastest time in FP1 was a 130.056. So a very, very speedy time, and certainly not a... nothing to turn your nose up at. That was a pretty good race, or sorry, a pretty good time set by Max Verstappen in FP1 there. So then second driver was Sergio Perez. He set a 130.237, so only not just under 2/10 behind his teammate. Carlos Sainz was third fastest with a 130.269, not that far off the pace either, just 2/10 behind Max Verstappen. Then George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc, Fernando Alonso, Oscar Piastri, Yuki Tsunoda, and then Lando Norris are the 10th fastest cars in FP1. Logan Sargeant crashed out after only getting a couple of laps in, looks like his team, Williams, have a bit of work to do to get that car sorted out for the race and for practice and for qualifying as well. I was going to take a look here. Wanted to look up some of the stats from last year. I'll do that. Maybe come back to that in a few moments. So one of the big questions that we've had is Ferrari and how they did obviously so exceptionally well in Australia two weeks ago, and whether or not they could repeat that form and that performance and do the same thing, maybe have a strong race and win again this weekend in Japan. So Carlos Sainz is trying to be a little bit grounded about this. He's trying to be a little bit realistic about that, and he feels that the team might have flattered themselves with that 1-2 finish in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago. Carlos had to say, quote, "It's true to say that in Australia we look very strong, but normally in these cases you just need to get the average of the first 3 races, and the average is we're still a couple of tenths off the Red Bull, and we need probably an upgrade, especially in tracks like Suzuka, to fight them. The job that the team has done this year is extremely good because the car is a very good step forward. It's just we need more of the same if we want to go for the wins like in tracks like maybe Japan. There's no big upgrade coming here. We have a very small thing in the car at the rear, but it will come later in the season, and I hope that is another good step in the same direction." End quote. So yeah, that's a little bit not really the most confident sounding or regressive sounding Carlos Sainz. Perhaps he seems kind of resigned to the fact that they'll still be good, but they're not going to be good enough to catch the Red Bulls or keep up with them on terms of pace. Charles Leclerc, he kind of he said a little bit different. He said, quote, "For now, with what we know, I'd expect Red Bull to still have the upper hand this weekend, especially coming to race day. We have a particular strength at tracks where front graining is a thing. In Australia, it was the case 2 weeks ago, and they were very strong coming into race day. This weekend's less of a case of front graining, but overall degradation. So Red Bull will get back to where they were before that. However, it's a very important part of the season where we need to maximize all the points that we can, which we have done. Because if we look at the first few races, I don't think that being only 4 points Red Bull represents our true performance. Yes, we are closer than what we were in the past, but we've done a particularly good job at maximizing what we have at the moment. And until the upgrades, which I hope puts us in a better position to fight them regularly on Sunday, we need to bring as many points home as possible. And that's why I think the start of our season is positive for that, end quote. So there you go. I guess he's a little bit more, well, I guess they're both realistic and kind of downplaying their expectations for this weekend, where, you know, they seem to obviously have the upper hand when it comes to tire or tracks where front tire graining is more of an issue, and overall degradation is more of a problem here, which plays into the hands of the Red Bull. But let's wait and see. I mean, those times I was just reading off a couple of moments ago when it comes to the FP1 times, take that with a pinch of salt, because all the cars are kind of doing a little bit different things. So we'll see again through FP2 and FP3. And of course, when we see qualifying, which will go tomorrow, because this is another good one for those of us, especially on the West Coast. This will go at 10 p.m. For the race start on Saturday night. So that is a, you know, this is a great way to spend a Saturday evening in my mind. So looking forward to it. But like I say, I mean, they seem to be very realistic about it. And when it comes down to that, let's be realistic. If Charles and Carlos are both a little bit, you know, realistic or downplaying their opportunities for the weekend, why don't we kind of call it the way that they're making it sound, that Max will be the one that is most likely to win this race. They'll probably be in there with a good opportunity for a podium. And then I guess where they sort of finish up depends entirely on how Sergio Perez qualifies tomorrow, and then how he does on the race on Sunday, and how that affects the two Ferraris. Is he going to be able to outpace him? Are they going to be able to stay ahead of him? So I think anywhere from P2 to 3 and 4 would be, you know, I mean, take any one of those picks between Sergio Perez, Carlos Sainz, and Charles Leclerc. Anyhow, time for another quick break. Be back on the flip side. Still a couple more things to talk about in regards to the Japanese Grand Prix. We'll do that in just a moment, so please don't go away. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, welcome back to the show. So it's been announced that Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton, that is going to lose his power unit from Australia because Mercedes have gone back and done a post-mortem and figured out what the cause of that engine failure was. So they took that engine after the Australian Grand Prix in Melbourne 2 weeks ago. They shipped it back to their engine facility at Brixworth to get an idea of what happened. And there was no real obvious explanation after the race. And the team was not really even sure at that point whether that power unit could be used again. So Mercedes have subsequently discovered that the problem with the power unit was terminal, meaning it can't be used again, won't be back into the allocation of power units that Lewis has for the season. So they finally figured out that the retirement that obviously forced Lewis out of the race 2 weeks ago was a bottom end failure, which it was traced back to a quality process issue rather than any particular problem or design problem with the engine itself, which seems incredible to me because Mercedes have been incredibly reliable and strong cars over the years. They've had some mechanical issues from here to there, or here and there, pardon me, but not anything very regularly. So this is unusual, and that something snuck through and did get picked up in quality control and things like that. So earlier in the show that it is or has been a bit of a difficult start to the season for Lewis Hamilton, and this is just one of those things. Lewis was asked about it. He's still trying to be a little bit optimistic about things. He said, quote, I think it's all about perspective. I think for us, of course, we've not started the season where we wanted to be, but we've got a long way to go. You've seen in the past year, last year, for example, just how things can switch in certain teams. Looking like at Aston Martin and McLaren last year, we started on the back foot. Anything can happen in the sport. I think we've just got to learn as much as we can, take as much as we can from all the data, remain positive, and continue to work hard. And I would say it's not how you fall, it's how you get up. We're just going to continue to chase and fight, and hopefully we can be fighting at the front at some stage. Sticking with mechanical retirements, so going back to the bigger of the two retirements proportionally was Max Verstappen, retired just after a couple of laps with a brake failure. So there has been no real detailed explanation from Red Bull about what happened to cause that brake failure. There have been plenty of theories out there. One of the thoughts was the failure of the team to tighten a screw that was critical to the brake caliper and its correct operation. Max Verstappen added a little bit of a little bit of fuel to that fire at on Thursday in the media scrum when he said that the retirement, the issue of the brake was a procedural thing rather than a design fault. His quote was, quote, it wasn't really a problem in the end, but you have to secure it properly. Of course, the procedures will be changed a bit to make sure it doesn't happen again, end quote. So his race engineer, Paul Monahan, explains that what happened was a little bit more complicated because, I mean, the way that Max is explaining it in that very cryptic and vague kind of description there was, just the way that we put the brake on wasn't correct. We'll make sure that it doesn't happen again. Monahan had to say, quote, as I've seen many times when cars retire from the race, a sequence of events has occurred in an appropriate order that has triggered it. You can almost trace it back into what began on Friday. Saturday, there were unclear hints that there was maybe something amiss, but there was nothing that stood out to say that it was going to let you down. So it was many things. If you can stop the sequence, you will stop the problem. So there are little changes in place to try and interrupt that sequence for a specific event, and it's applicable to all of the car. If there's a sequence of events that leads to a race retirement, you try to interrupt it before you get to them. So I'm not going to say to you it's a process or anything else. Everybody will do their best to ensure we break the sequence, end quote. So I don't know. That was a lot more than what Max had to say, but his race engineer said a lot more, or at least, pardon me, Red Bull chief engineer Paul Monahan had a lot more to say, but it was still fairly kind of vague and cryptic, even though he explained it about three times longer than Max Verstappen did. Valtteri Bottas said that the issues that Sauber have been having with pit stop issues are not going to get solved for a little while yet until after China. So he said that they're not at 100% fixed when it comes to that, and it's going to take a little while longer. Two weeks ago in Australia, Valtteri's first pit stop ran to nearly 30 seconds, and then they had a wheel nut that rolled out across the pit lane, and then Sauber was fined €5,000 for that safety violation. Bottas basically said that they're working night and day to fix the pit stop issues, and he said that there was some progress on modifications made to procedures and some of the materials that they're using. He went on in details to say, quote, some measures have been taken, but still not 100% fixed, unfortunately. But again, the chance of having an issue should be lower. Basically, it's an issue that we didn't know before the season that it would be an issue, and it's not a quick fix. But there is a 100% fixed plan, hopefully for China. Still not 100% sure, but here extra measures have been taken on that, end quote. So there you go. A bit of a sad note here, this story. I mean, the, you know, all due respect to Charles Leclerc. I love the gesture in this. But this weekend, he's going to have his helmet painted in the scheme of Jules Bianchi, which was his friend who was injured seriously at a crash at Suzuka in 2014, 10 years ago. He passed away in July the following year of the injuries sustained, and he never really recovered to any meaningful state, which was very, very sad. It was a very, very wet race, and right at the end of the race, he slid off the track and hit a piece of equipment that was trying to get a car out of the gravel, as far as I remember. So Bianchi was a mentor for Charles Leclerc. They were both Charles said that Bianchi was a game changer in his career, and their families were and still are to this day very close with one another. And so, like I say, it's been 10 years since that. So Leclerc has designed or put the paint scheme together. It's very, very similar to what Bianchi was wearing on his helmets when he was driving from Marussia, 10 years ago. And it includes the number 17, which was Jules' number. And was eventually retired from use by the FIA. When he was speaking to motorsport.com, Charles said, quote, of course, it's a very special place. And whenever I get here, I have somewhere in my mind Jules. I think obviously about Jules very often because he's been the person that helped me to get there. Back in 2010, I'd already spoken to Nicholas Todd, my manager, in order for me to get support to get to F1. And he's been a game changer in my career. And before that, we've always been extremely, extremely close. And both of our families are still very close. So it's a very special place for me to be here. I'll be having my helmet for him this weekend. And of course, as always, he's always in my heart, and it's going to be very important to do well this weekend, end quote. So a bit of a sad one, but lovely gesture by Charles Leclerc to pay tribute to his late friend, Jules Bianchi. Okay, let's talk now. Just we start to wrap this thing one this one up. Fernando Alonso said the strange penalty that he was given in Australia won't change the way that he approaches to racing in F1. If we dial it back a couple of weeks ago, he was given this 20-second penalty for braking and lifting sooner, going into what was it, turn 5 or 6, which translated to about 100 meters in track distance. That caught out George Russell, who lost downforce, went into the gravel, hit the tire wall, and then flipped up and was left hanging in the cockpit, not being able to see any cars coming around the corner. Must have been a horrible situation for George. Anyways, Fernando Alonso said, quote, it was clear, and I think it's still clear. It was a bit surprising, the penalty in Melbourne. There's nothing we can do. We have to accept and move on and concentrate on here, but I think it will not change how much we drive and how we approach racing. There's no obligation to drive 57 laps in the same way. Sometimes we get a slower pace to save fuel, to save tires, to save battery, and sometimes we go into slow corners in some sectors of the track to give the DRS to the car behind us, because that will be a useful tool if the second car behind us is at a faster pace. All of those things are completely normal, and it will be forever in motorsports. So we had one penalty, probably a one-off, that we will never apply ever again, end quote. So that's an interesting take on it. I remember after that happened a couple of weeks ago, reading a quote by Damon Hill, which I think we talked about on the podcast at the time, that he was in agreement with Fernando Alonso, that what he did was a part of racing. And I guess the big question is that those who had the access to the data and the telemetry was was that over the line? Because we have seen George Russell do it before, chasing late in the race and crash out and got caught out. I mean, most recently he did it in Singapore towards the end of last season in September or whenever it was. So I think that also happened to him in Montreal at one point. You know, be that, you know, saying that, of course, that doesn't excuse Fernando Alonso or anyone else, you know, from dangerous or reckless things. If we go and take a look at what some of the quotes from Sergio Perez, he's fearful that, just like Fernando Alonso said, that this is a one-off thing and that it won't be applied again in the future. Checo had to say, quote, "My take is the penalty was definitely a bit too much over the limit. I'd say it was a bit unnecessary to do so. But my biggest fear is that we might see this incident again this weekend or next weekend and probably nothing will happen. That's my biggest fear because we've been struggling a lot to keep the consistency within the penalties. For example, in Jeddah, there was a block of Bottas in Q1 at 300 kilometers per hour with two cars, Oliver Bearman and Alex Albon, no penalty. I block Nico Hülkenberg. He lost half a tenth. He goes faster on the lap after, and I get to three places. So I think the biggest talking point should be about consistency. If weekends like this are going to be penalized, then they should be penalized every single weekend, because as a driver, it hurts a lot when you work your ass off and then you see this inconsistency," end quote. So, you know, that's fair enough. I mean, if you're going to call it one time, then you should call it each and every time and not, you know, occasionally, sporadically, or once and then never again. Just going to finish up now with George Russell. He said he wants to see an automated FIA safety system to automatically suspend races after accidents, you know, similar to like what he had. So, I mean, he was on the race radio very, very quickly when he was very scared and obviously wanted the race stopped, because he was literally left dangling in the car and somebody could have come flying around there, crashed into them, which would have been obviously a very, very serious situation. And we've seen very, very horrible things happen in other formulas over the years. Anyways, George was asked, he said it was an incredible, quote, "It was an incredibly uncomfortable position to be in. You're on a blind bend where cars approach at 250 kilometers an hour, right on the racing line with the car half upside down. I was waiting for disaster to happen. Fortunately, I had a 10-second gap behind me, and I think it was 10 or 12 seconds before the virtual safety car came out. But in the space of 10 seconds, you can have 5, 6, 7 cars, and if it was on a lap on one of the race, and I probably would have been hit numerous times, even with the yellow flag. We've seen close incidents before when a car comes back onto the track after a crash. Carlos Sainz, for example, 2022 in Japan. I think we need to find a way that if a car is in a danger zone, there could be an automated VSCU straight away within half a second or so, because those seconds count. Lives are at risk. We've seen it at Spa numerous times in the past with cars aquaplaning. I think it's time with the technology that we have to make steps in this area, end quote. So, you know, that is fair enough. I mean, that was a scary situation. I mean, we saw that the aftermath of that accident pretty quick on the television feed a couple of weeks ago. And I must admit that I was quite alarmed to see the Mercedes originally. I wasn't, well, obviously we knew who it was because Lewis was out of the race at that point. But I was, you know, quite concerned immediately after it happened as well, because he was flipped on the side there and anybody could have come around the corner. Fortunately, the cuffs, you know, the cars were spaced out, you know, enough that there was nobody immediately behind him. And I'm sure that everybody else on the pit wall were on the radios immediately to their drivers to let them know that what had happened, to slow down. But, you know, this time we all got lucky and nothing bad happened to George Russell. But that might not be the same thing next time around. So hopefully they take those suggestions of George and do something with it. All right, going to leave it there for now. Thank you all very much for joining in. Be back on Sunday at some point to wrap this one up and talk about what happens over the next couple of days in qualifying and the race proper on Saturday evening here, or Sunday afternoon if you're in Asia, and something in between everywhere else. Anyways, have a great weekend. Enjoy the Japanese Grand Prix and be back again very soon. Again, but before I go, if you want to support the show, by all means, we would love that if you could do so. If you could spend a couple of moments, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., and leave a 5-star rating and a review, and that would be much appreciated and the best way to support this show and help it grow. If you want to give me a follow on X, you can find me at Scuderia F1 Pod, and send an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. Got a couple of emails this week. There was one just regarding F1 memorabilia. Got to look into that one before I can give you a good answer. You know who you are who sent that email. I'll try and address that on Sunday, or at least send you a message back. But until then, everyone, have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.